I want to start today with a fun trivia question, something different. So grab your pen or pen. You might need a pen or pencil to write this down. So what journalist bridges the gap between the following famous people? Jeff Bezos, Richard Branson, Robert De Niro, Clint Eastwood, Al Pacino, George Clooney, Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hanks, Bruce Springsteen, Dr. Dre, Quincy Jones, Woody Allen, Barbara Walters, Pele, Yao Ming, Serena Williams, John Wooden, and Muhammad Ali. They have all been interviewed by our guest today, Cal Fussman.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset. Learn and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us. Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Cal, welcome to the show.
Now that was what I call an introduction. Keep going, brother.
I was joking to my friend the other day. I have incredible people like Cal, but I'm the guy who interviews the interviewer. So I'm going to try to shut my mouth and learn from the best. A lot of the listeners and a lot of people might expect me to ask Cal, you know, what it was like fighting Julio Cesar Chavez or chatting with Mikhail Gorbachev, having like a long sit-down chat, or swimming over 18-foot tiger sharks, or rolling around the mountains with gorillas in Rwanda, daily breakfast checks with Larry King, and chatting with Serena Williams and Kobe Bryant. These are expectations. I promise you guys, we're going to put info in the show notes. Cal has told these stories, so I'm not here to push the hand of God. I'm just here to listen, and I want to start. That's a lot of people and a lot of conversations and a lot of accomplishments. Cal, have you ever felt kind of like an imposter or kind of like, what am I doing here in this place? Has that ever happened to you?
No.
I love it.
And I'll tell you why. My style of interviewing, while it had a genesis in traditional journalism. I started out in newspapers at the Miami Herald and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch as a sports writer. And then I went to work for a year in magazines in New York at this great sports magazine, very short-lived, called Inside Sports. It was competing with Sports Illustrated at the time. We live in a completely different era. Back in that time, when Sports Illustrated came out, like, people ran to the mailbox to get it. We're talking about a time before ESPN. And so magazines were a big thing. The way people might have Netflix subscriptions or Hulu subscriptions now, in those days, you subscribed to magazines. And you look forward to the content they brought you. And so I joined this magazine that had just started to compete with Sports Illustrated. And it was a dream for me because I was able to interview all of the sports heroes that I saw on TV as a kid and go off to see the Pittsburgh Steelers while they're goat chasing their fifth Super Bowl ring, going for one for the thumb. And it was idyllic. I'm also meeting all the great writers who are coming to New York to the editorial offices and going to the bars afterwards. So throwing back shots with Hunter Thompson is just an amazing time. And I am 22 years old. And unfortunately, this magazine, Inside Sports, while it was an incredibly great creative success, it did not do enough monetarily to compete with Sports Illustrated, and it went belly up. And that was after a year or so that I'd been there. So I didn't know what I was going to do at that point, because it's like you have this dream job and where it's gone. And there's nothing else like it out there. Like even Sports Illustrated wasn't, it was more of a, well, as great as it was a package. And Inside Sports basically allowed you to like go in with crazy ideas and go off on them. And so I didn't know what I was going to do. So I called up my mom and I told her, you know, I think I'm going to take a little time off and just do some traveling. And she said, oh, that's a wonderful idea. Always had my back. And when she said it, she had no idea that I wasn't coming back for 10 years.
Whoops.
Well, I did come back to say hello occasionally, but okay. It took me on a trip around the world. And it was a very unusual trip. And one that only could be done because of four words. I had no money. Or I had a little money, but very little money. Certainly not enough to spend on hotel night after night.
Cal, I had little money is four words as well. So we'll take either of them.
All right. So you might recognize this situation. This is how it played out. I would go to bus stations, train stations, and I would find out like where the next bus or train was going. To me, the destination didn't matter. What mattered to me was the trip down the aisle, because I am looking for an empty seat. An empty seat next to somebody who looks interesting, somebody I think who might be able to trust me, somebody who I might be able to trust. And I got to pick just the right seat, because as soon as that train starts rolling, a conversation's going to start. Even if we can't speak the same language, it's going to be charades, but it's going to be a conversation. And by the end of that trip, by the end of that conversation, I need them to invite me home, because otherwise, I got no roof over my head.
Oh, stakes are high.
The stakes are, let me tell you how high the stakes were.
Yes, please.
This will give you an idea. As I'm walking down that aisle, I see a beautiful woman smiling at me. No rings on her fingers. Could be a supermodel. I just walked right on by. Because let's face it, she wasn't going to be taking me home. But that grandma in the back, that 83-year-old Hungarian grandma, toothless grandma, she could be winner.
20-some-year-old cow looking cute, grandma in the back.
And so let me give you an idea of what transpired. I'd go to the back of the train in Hungary, sit down next to grandma. Train would start to roll. And after a while, I turned to her and say, what makes a great goulash? course, she has no idea what I'm talking about. She doesn't speak English. This is before the Iron Curtain came down. So, you know, we're talking like 80s. And when I say the Iron Curtain, I mean the Berlin Wall and everything that came down, that opened up afterward. And so she doesn't speak English. I don't really speak much Hungarian. And we're now going back and forth like a game of charades. I'm just acting like I'm lifting like a utensil to my mouth and eating food. And she's trying to understand. And the great thing about this time period where there were always young people around, and especially if it was behind the Iron Curtain, many were learning English, and it was a real attraction to meet somebody from America who they could talk to. And so they always gravitated to these conversations like metal filings to a magnet. He wants to know, what makes a great goulash? And now you see grandma's chest start to swell. I'll tell him what makes a great goulash. And she's talking about her mother's goulash, her grandmother's goulash, the time, the care, the ingredients, the love that she throws into her goulash. And she turns to these young people and says, you know, I've been traveling on this train for a long time, and I've actually seen, I've noticed you on this train before, and never have one of you come and ask me about my goulash. But this young man has come from thousands of kilometers away to find out about my goulash. You tell him he's coming home with me. So we go, train stops, grandma takes me home, I get a place to stay, and now she's in high gear. She is calling up friends, relatives, family, and the next night they're all surrounding me at the table as grandma's goulash is placed in front of me. I'm going to have my first taste. And I lift it up to my lips, and my eyes close, rapture. My cheeks lift, and the crowd goes crazy. He loves grandma's goulash. Party breaks out, 3 days, and during which time somebody comes over to me and says, have you by any chance ever tasted homemade apricot brandy? Because my dad, he makes the best homemade apricot brandy you're ever going to taste. Lives about 45 minutes from here. I am telling you, you got to come home and taste his apricot brandy. Will you? Okay. So grandma's party ends. We go to taste the apricot brandy. Another party breaks out. This one, 4 days. During which time, another guy comes over and says, have you ever tasted or have you ever visited the capital of paprikash in the world, Szeged, Hungary? And I said, oh. He said, you cannot leave Hungary. It's my guest. And a visit to Szeged. Okay. And basically, that is how I got around the world for 10 years without a home. Being passed from family, friends, sometimes they would send me to a city. I'd get off the bus. Somebody'd be waiting for me, take me in. Sometimes I would have to stay in a hotel. Some countries, it was impossible for people to take me in. At the time, Romania had a dictator named Ceausescu, who literally had just scared the entire country stiff. I mean, people wouldn't even talk to me for fear of being like seen by the secret police and taken away. But for the most part, people took me in, passed me around, and that's how I got around the world. Now, how does that come back to your question? Because you asked it about 20 minutes ago.
fear ever feeling like an imposter. You're in the wrong seat today.
And here's why I never felt like an imposter.
Yeah.
because when I returned to the United States and I started to write for Esquire, and I started to sit down with Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, early interviews with UCLA basketball coach John Wooden, who's one of the icons of the game. I went into those interviews as if I was walking down the aisle of the bus and I sat down next to them. So there was never a feeling of me being an imposter because I was the traveler who just sat in a seat and happened to be lucky that Al Pacino was sitting next to me. And that's how I always felt.
So maybe Cal's born with it, but I'm wondering, where did that traveler, love of adventure, curiosity, it's kind of a lot of questions here, but you're curious, you love adventure, and you're very trusting. So you're trusting the journey. Is Cal born with it? Did you learn this somewhere, or where do you get it from? Because I want more of whatever you're having, Cal.
Well, you know, my dad worked for IBM for 28 years. And so I watched him get up every morning. We lived in Long Island, New York. His office was was in Manhattan. And he would get on the train at the same time every day. He would generally return on the train at the same time every day. And I guess you could say I was rebelling against him. I don't know that I see it as a rebellion now. I just wanted something different. I wanted the trains that I got on to be always taking me to a new place. Mm. And that's why my travels ended up the way they did.
Of all these places, if you could teleport anywhere with a big smile on your face right now, what location's coming to mind first?
Well, you know what? A few days ago, if you had asked me that question, I would have teleported to Brazil to be at Pelé's funeral. Mm. And I got a chance to, I actually met him once, and then I had a phone conversation with him, which I just reproduced for my podcast, Big Questions. And I would have liked to have this been there to pay my respects. He's somebody who made everybody smile. Very few people connect with the world, and he was one of them. In fact, he is known for being either the greatest soccer player who ever lived or one of the greats of all time. Won 3 World Cups between 1958 and 1970. But if you asked him about the biggest moment in his career, maybe even his life, it happened in 1967 when there was a war, a civil war in Biafra, Nigeria. And his club was traveling around the world playing games and exhibitions. And he was contacted and asked if his team would play in Nigeria. And the people administering to the team said, we can't do that. There's like this civil war going on. We can't play in that atmosphere. And they said, if Pelé will come and play, we will halt the war for 48 hours. And so the team went, and there was a ceasefire for 48 hours. Everybody came to see Pelé play, and then he left. And I mean, I don't know that there's anybody around now who could stop a war.
It's powerful.
Yeah. So that's where I would teleport. I would have teleported back to his funeral. And even if it was today, I'd want to go back and be around the stadium where he had his sort of a memorial setting. that would have made me feel connected.
Real connected. And in the show notes, Cal's reflection on Pele will be there from Big Questions Podcast. But let's specifically talk about this theme of connection, because I know with Big Questions and health and connection, mind, body, other people, connection seems to be a legacy piece for you. We can start with Pele or take it wherever you'd like. Where do you find this power and love of connection comes from? What is the meaning? Why is it such a piece, a discussion piece on Big Questions? I like to ask five questions at once, Gal, so you can take any of them.
First, here's a good rule for interviewing.
Please.
Try not to ask double barrel questions. Yes, in your sir. Case, you're asking five barrel questions.
Agree. Yes.
And here's why. I'm going to recommend that you focus on one question at a time.
Yeah.
Because if you ask five questions at once, number one, it's going to be hard to for the subject to remember five questions or in the order that you ask the questions. Number two, there may be one or two of those questions which you're very curious about that the subject might want to avoid. And so the subject then can just pick the question that he or she likes and take the answer off to a completely different direction, far away from the question that they want to avoid. So that's why, and I hope that you're okay with the tips.
I love the tips.
Because everybody's got their own style, and I never say you should interview somebody like this. It's just for these reasons, you want to be able to just ask a singular question in order for somebody to be completely focused on it and to deliver an honest answer. And then if they don't want to answer it, you know, that's cool. They'll have to either express why they don't, or they may try to avoid it, in which case the listener is going to understand, well, they didn't answer that question. There's something else deeper going on, which case you could follow up if you want. Mm-hmm. But it just makes things a lot more transparent. You know, the five, throwing out the five questions is sort of like a multiple choice test where, you know, pick the one you like. And the good thing about it, I will say, is that there will be one in there that they like, and they can choose that one, and all's well. So, you know what, maybe for your style, it is a good thing to go with five questions, because you're looking for maybe a question that's going to make them feel most comfortable. And that way you're guaranteeing that there will be comfort, and in doing so, you are gaining the trust of the subject, because they're knowing you're not trying to make them feel uncomfortable in any way, or shock or surprise them. So after all that, I say, you know what? Keep going the way you're going. You're doing a great job.
I love this wave of feedback, because you're nailing it on the head that the reason, and this started where I've been in interviews that it's not Cal Fussman, and maybe it's their first podcast interview, and I look for body language tips, or I give them a few different topics so they can take it and run. Cal, I'm very high in agreeableness, and asking a pointed question that hits, knowing that I don't plan to edit and I plan to help them look good, for me is almost like walking a plank a little bit. But it almost sounds like, for transparency and reality and the rawness of the conversation, I could possibly take a couple more risks.
I would agree with that. And I think you'll also find that if you would take those risks quite often, you don't have, it's not about gotcha questions.
Right.
It's often about the best question makes the person asked just as curious about the answer as you are. Mm. So it may be the kind of question that doesn't get an immediate response because you just tapped into their curiosity. They got to think about it. Where am I going with this? Mm. And they're actually going to be finding out about themselves as they go on this journey. And that's one of the great things that can come out of an interview, where the subject is learning as much or more about themselves as the interviewer and the audience. And the subject hadn't even thought about certain issues, would never have brought up certain memories. And the only reason they came up is because the question tapped into them. So I would encourage you to take more risks, but I also encourage you to stay yourself, because you have a very natural and easy way about you. Your voice has a natural lilt to it. It's non-threatening. It makes people feel comfortable. So you might be able to take more of a risk with your questions because your voice is saying, hey, this is okay.
We're safe here.
You're safe here. There's nothing for you to worry about. And actually, this question is meant to allow you to learn something about yourself that you might never have thought about today.
So, Cal, in a moment, we'll move to connection, but I love this topic. Your mother were to have a podcast. If your mother were to have had a podcast and asked young Cal one question that obviously Ben wouldn't know to ask, what would your mom ask young Cal?
If my mom had a podcast, it would have been her at the microphone talking from start to finish. That's how I actually have to say thank you, Mom, because that's how I became a good listener. My mom liked to talk. And she might ask some questions or two, but I never really saw her as a very curious person. She liked to make things very comfortable, hated conflict. So I don't think she would have ever asked somebody a question that might make them feel uncomfortable or might make them stop to think. I think her podcast would be a lot of easy conversation, topical and on the surface.
What would be the topic?
The topic would probably be about family, friends. She was devoted to her family completely. It was whole life. Mm. So, it's hard to know how things have changed over the last half century or so, if there are still young moms who are like that. There probably are. But, you know, my mom didn't work when I was a kid. It was all about family.
Family.
And her conversations were about the family members she just talked with on the phone or found out about. That was her life.
Love it.
She would not have been interviewing Al Pacino.
on the reverse end, then, who is the most curious person that you've ever met?
Well, Larry King, I had breakfast with every day for about 12 years, from 2008 to 2020, before COVID and Larry's health put an end to it.
Yeah.
Was amazingly curious. And I think more curious than I am. His whole being was about being curious. And it was wonderful to be around him every morning for breakfast. And it wasn't just Larry and I, there could be eight other people at the table. And it was like a regular congregation. And it was really a beautiful thing. And again, comes back to the word connection. You show up every day at a table with the same group of people, and you have an amazing connection that gets the day off to a great start. If you come to the breakfast table, if anyone has a problem, there are eight people to solve it or try to solve it. And it really is a great energy that I don't know that we have anymore. I don't know how many people are sitting around in a group of eight every day and breaking bread and then going off to seize the day. But I was very grateful to have that. I got to figure out a way to recreate it.
I feel like the way some people do it is the Hollywood Squares on Zoom, but that's not quite the same as breaking bread.
Well, you know what? Maybe it's something for me to try.
Possibly, yeah.
Hollywood Squares.
I'm sure someone's wondering, so I definitely have to ask. So between his fork and knife, what was Larry King eating for breakfast in the morning?
Well, we ate, and at the start, there's a deli in Beverly Hills called Nate and Al's. So it's like an old Jewish deli, and it was the kind of deli that Larry lived in all of his life, whether he's in New York or Miami. For breakfast, he hated eggs, so that took a big part of the menu off.
That's right.
Off the table. But he could get like a bagel and cream cheese and lox. That was one of his standard to goes.
So we're going to pivot, because we mentioned your podcast, Big Questions, and I want to give some airtime on that. Talk about why you started Big Questions, and kind of the second question is going to be the future and its current state, because I know it's transformed and evolved over time.
Yeah, what happened is, this goes back to Larry. He was asked through somebody who'd come to the table if he would speak at an event on a cruise ship. And one of the things about Larry was he could never say no. If you came to table asked for something, he would say yes. Even like if four people asked him if he could be in an event at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night, they were, I can do it. And then the party you'd asked would have to check in with his executive assistant and find out that the time was already taken. He can never say no. And so when he said yes, I knew he was not going to be speaking on this cruise ship, because he not only didn't he like eggs, but he didn't like water. Didn't like to go swimming. Even in the shower, he was in and out in like a minute. Just didn't like to be around water. And so as this cruise ship event approached, and Larry, he's not going to make it. And often people knew that I was having breakfast with every morning, so they would ask me questions and said, he's not going to be there. So I was asked to, if I would speak on the cruise ship. And I did, and I started to tell these stories about De Niro and meeting Donald Trump and Muhammad Ali and Mikhail Gorbachev. And it got a standing ovation, which led me to meet Tim Ferriss, who has a podcast listened to by millions. And I went on his podcast. It was a great experience. I just told stories for like 3 hours. Yeah, literally, it's more than 3 hours.
So you know, and the listeners will know, it'll be in the show notes. That's the first time I heard about you about 7 years ago on that Tim Ferriss podcast. So
I think it's episode 145. And like millions of people heard it. And Tim said, you got to start a podcast. You got to start a podcast. But I was at the time, and may still be, a technophobe, meaning that like all of the technology that came with the podcast, it was kind of frightening to me. And now it seems very, I'm looking at you on Zoom and you got your headphones on, you got a microphone. It seems very basic, but at the time I was just scared that I wouldn't like hit the right buttons, that things would go wrong. And so I was always pushing it away. But Tim just kept pushing. And then finally he said, Cal, why don't you just go interview Larry and we'll put it up on my podcast?
Oh.
So I did that. Sent it in. He put it up. And I said, oh, he's right. It's not too hard at all. Well, he had an audio engineer set it up. And so I realized, okay, I need an audio engineer. And he helped me make contacts so that I could start a podcast. We called it Big Questions. And at first, the guests were Tim, Kobe Bryant. It was like people who had a lot of followers and a lot of interest. And then as time passed, it just sort of transitioned to the current of my life, where I was going, what I was doing as I started to speak. And it really didn't have a theme. It was just a journey with Cal. This is who Cal met this week. Cal, another interesting person.
There's the Tim Ferriss show. This was the Cal Fussman show.
Yeah. Big Questions with Cal Fussman. And then what happened is COVID hit. And I realized, you know, maybe the podcast ought to look at what's going on in healthcare now. This is like the most important thing. So I veered it toward healthcare and I learned a lot. And you can't even say the system's broken because it's not really a system. It's just a lot of different entities that do things that figure out ways to be connected. And it's in a place, look, before I started, every day in America, a physician was committed suicide. That was before COVID.
Wow.
So there are a lot of problems and difficulties. Now, after the pandemic hit, like all the nurses started to leave the nursing homes. And I get this, for every 43 jobs, nursing positions in nursing homes, there's only one person to fill them. I'm looking at your face and it's like, what? That's right.
Grimace and frustration.
And we are now collectively down 1 million nurses in America, maybe down 1.5 million by 2030. There are tremendous problems at the time that technology is stepping up to try to fill this void, but there's only so much technology can do. There's a human touch to this that really needs to be there. And so I just talked to a lot of people about what this whole experience is. And as we started to come out of it, this is very recent, 2023 was coming along, I realized that, look, there's no way that Cal Fussman is going to overhaul the whole healthcare system. But I do have a gift of making connections. And the whole society has been tremendously disconnected over the last 3 years. And so there's something that I can do about this. And I talk to people who are in business or working at businesses, and like everyone is telling me, we have new teams. I mean, look, 40 to 50 million people left their jobs in 2021. And I think it's late as last September, 4 million people left there. We may have had like 100 million jobs shuffled over the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. You got 40 million people working remotely. There's just tremendous disconnection, you know, and like these companies need to reconnect, because if you're not connected, it's, you know, any, just look at any sport team. If you're not connected, you're not going to stand a good chance of winning.
Right.
And there are ways to bring people together, an hour and a half, a couple of hours with a workshop, by asking questions and having a group around to listen to the answers. Everybody can leave knowing each other in a whole new way. And so that's why I decided to take this direction into the word connection, and help companies and any organization that needs to connect or reconnect.
If you're talking to an everyday folk like Ben and possibly some of the listeners, what would you recommend we do to start? Not all of us have the platform of the podcast. What can the everyday folk do to start and reconnect this disconnected world?
Well, a big part of this is simple, like eye-to-eye conversation that people can feel is safe and they can feel listened to. Because most people do not feel listened to. And in order to connect, you have to listen to the other person. So just starting with attentive listening is a great way to go. But we're dealing with a whole new generation of people.
Cal, I'm smiling. Maybe. I'm smiling just because it sounds so darn obvious, but sometimes it's hard to do.
Well, look, if you've got people walking around wearing earbuds, how are they going to listen to you?
Yeah.
You know, I was at UCLA. I was speaking to a class in the business school. And afterward, a young woman came running up to me and said, Cal, wait till you hear this. I got this great business idea. It's an app. Wait till you hear what it does. I said, really? What is it? And she said, you know how they have these conferences where there's so many people don't know each other? Well, my app allows, like, if you've got 8 people at the table, they can all go on this app and type in messages to communicate with the others. Now, keep in mind, I'm thinking like, well, why wouldn't they just say, hello? How did you like the last session?
Sure.
But she said, but they would never talk to each other. unless it came through cell phone. And I started to laugh at the time, but younger people more and more are more connected to their devices than they are to each other. Now, I just read research said 1 in 5 young men in America doesn't have friends. And the amount of time that people see their best friends has diminished over the years, so that it's like hours less in a month than it was like a decade ago. We're just not connecting, even though it's the best thing for us. I guarantee you, if you are surrounded by people that you love at breakfast every morning, and you make a special trip to show up there, greet your friends, have a wonderful meal, share your problems. And remember, every time you share a problem with somebody, you're cutting it in half, because they may have a solution to it. Mm-hmm. You got 8 people at the table. It's like slicing a pie. Yeah. served to 8 different people who can potentially offer a way out.
Once you get that pie cut small enough, you're like, I don't need this pie anyways. You can walk away and not eat it.
Well, you're going to get a lot of advice. Yeah. You're going to get a chance to talk out your problem.
Yeah.
And to your point, you may say, you know what? That pie's got a little too many calories. I'm just heading out the door. That is something that we all should be thinking about, because we are not connecting the way that we used to. And, you know, I mentioned wanting to transport to Pelé's funeral, but it should be known that this guy connected with the world in a way that I don't know if there's anybody who's done that. Muhammad Ali connected with the world in a way that I don't know that there's anybody like that now. And those people knew something about connection and how it came through the heart first, not through a machine, through the human heart. And that is what we need to do. We need to realign the hearts to connect. You're asking, like, what's the first move?
Yeah.
And the first move is looking each other in the eye, speaking with each other in a way where we touch each other's hearts. And once that connection is established, much bigger things can happen. But if somebody is working home remotely, and all the conversations that person's having is on Zoom and their business conversations, well, they're going to feel disconnected.
I'm sitting with that, Cal, because that's a big part of my life. So my heartstrings are playing a tune. I'm an example, like most of the listeners, were of the age where we were raised with sticks and graduated with supercomputers. So I started without technology and lived through the start of it. How do us who are in our upper 20s, 30s, and 40s and beyond, and it's more of what you just said, but how can we be the mentors of our youth? A lot of us were raised with sticks and then eventually computers. So we've seen them both, but the youth haven't seen both. How can we serve as great mentors to those youth?
Well, that's where I'm wanting to go.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to do is speak to college audiences, when it comes time for them to go off on job interviews, or what they see as like getting into the real world. And that real world requires eye-to-eye contact. It requires an ability to communicate directly with somebody while you're looking them in the eyes. A lot of these college students who are coders, they're living in a completely different world. I once spoke to a convention filled with people who code. And when they walk into the auditorium, it's completely different from everybody else. They come into the room, and instead of walking towards the front, and not everybody likes to be in the front two rows, but the coders immediately go to the back row. And they fill out the back row. And then you'll see laptops come out.
Yep.
And screens go up. And then the next coders will come into the room. And they'll take the second to last row in the back. And then those screens will come up. And they need help in communicating and telling their stories. Obviously, they offer a great service because not everybody can do the coding that they do.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, they tend to be more helpful just in a place where they can get more done, be more helpful, just alone in front of a screen, getting the math right, getting the programming right. And you know what the problem with that is? They can do great work. They can do amazing work. And you know what the company then says? Great job. We're going to promote you. Okay. What's the promotion to? Manager.
Yeah.
Now imagine somebody without the communication skills, they can just do the coding and the math. And now they get a job where they're having to communicate with other people who may not be good with communication. And it's a nightmare. Those people don't want to be managers. They just want to be solving these coding problems. So there are a few people who can master the coding and also look you eye in the eye and tell a great story. And those people tend to become the chief technology officer. If you can't do that, you're going to be a coder or an engineer solving the problems. And if somehow that doesn't work out, as the saying goes, you end up a barista at Starbucks. So it's just inherent on everybody to be able to tell a story better, to be able to ask questions, to be able to communicate, do a back and forth, make people feel comfortable, which is going to increase the sense of connection, and more will be accomplished because teams work better when they're connected.
They do. Cal, I have this image of a busy room where everybody has their laptop right in front of them, and you're sitting front row center with a pencil and one notepad.
Well, I'm definitely.
And maybe a recorder. I forgot about the recorder. You'd bring the recorder as well.
I'm moving more to the tech space. I completely acknowledge, you find out what's going on with drones and you can see what's going on in Ukraine, how the war is moving toward a war of drones. And you see here, amazingly crazy stuff is going on where there's this hurricane in Houston and a dog was chained to the ground when the water started falling, and as the water level increased, the dog had to start paddling for its own survival. It was paddling for hours, and a drone flying overhead noticed it, and they saved the dog.
It's amazing.
And, you know, these drones, we can't say, oh, you gotta connect, forget the drones. Right. No, the drones are coming. The drones are already here. The drones would be helpful when people are doing inspections on these huge towers, and sometimes people get hurt or fall. And the drones can actually do the inspections. Nobody has to go up there and be hurt. I'm not saying that this new world is wrong. Yeah. I'm saying the technology is great, but we don't feel as well when we feel disconnected. If you're I was just talking to somebody the other day, they were at their job, somebody got fired, and they're working remotely. They don't know what's going on. And that feeling of disconnection only makes them spend more time worrying about what's happening, as opposed to maybe being able to understand what's happening and then just moving forward. We're just at a distance. And there are ways that people can come together and find out about each other through questions. That's what my workshop does. And, you know, I teach people how to tell stories. And then we ask them questions in front of everybody. So everybody finds out who everybody really is. And then 2 hours later, everybody walks out and they know who they're connected to. I mean, think about this. It's a business podcast, right?
Yeah.
So just say you got a sales team and they're working for this company, and you got all these other people who've been working at the company for a long time, the new salesperson. And all these people who've been working there for a long time have all these stories that could help this salesman sell the product, but the salesperson hasn't heard the stories. And so it's as if he has no idea what the company's about. And so all I'm saying is there are ways for people to be connected and pass this information on so that everybody could get the most out of themselves.
Kel, it's a quick plug. We have a mutual friend in John Livesey. Sale is in the tail. He's been on the podcast and he talks about just that. Putting together case stories for the team so everyone has a story to tell in every situation they run into in business. Kel, I am grateful for your time. I'm serving as the host and your publicist that I have already went over your time. But if you have an additional moment, the listeners want to keep, you know, having these big questions answered and learn more from you. Where can we go and support the Kel?
You can go to calfussman.com, CalFussman.com. And on the website, you'll see the Big Questions podcast tab. You can click that. You can also, if you want to contact me or connect, you can send me an email. And there's also places where, if you are interested in a connectivity workshop for your organization, where you can click a tab and just let me know who you are, and we'll be in contact with you and we'll find out if we could pull something off.
I love it. And guys, if you know me and you're a listener, reach out to me and I'll give you some of these resources and make sure we can bridge that connection. Kel, humbling experience. I appreciate the feedback. I tried to put it into effect immediately. And you've been a blessing to have on the show. Thanks again for the time today.
Oh, thank you, Ben. And you keep it going. You got, as I mentioned, a very peaceful voice that will make anybody you interview feel safe and secure, which will allow you to get a lot of good information, because that voice is the essence of trust. So use it well, use it wisely, and keep it going, brother.
Kel, honored. Thank you for again coming on the show, and be well. We'll keep in touch.
All right. Thanks so much. Cheers.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.